To find out how you can reach Latino USA's listeners, visit us online at latinousa.org/support.
From NPR, it's Latino USA. An undocumented student and his horn take center stage in New York City to play the national anthem.
When the Star Spangled Banner is playing, I still put my hand over my heart because I take this country as my own. I just want to be recognized as an American because that's what I feel like I am.
Sam is stepping out of the shadows. Our series, American Dreamer, continues. That's coming up on Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Stay with us.
This is news from Latino USA. I'm Angela Maldonado. Cuban President Raul Castro issued a rare statement of regret over the death of a jailed dissident. Prisoner Orlando Zapata Tamayo died as a result of an 85-day hunger strike protesting prison conditions on the island. The 42-year-old Tamayo was a plumber serving a 36-year sentence for disobedience against the government. He had been in prison since 2003. In his statement, Castro denies any torture or executions and added that reports that Tamayo was mistreated were false. A statement of this kind is a first for Castro. The United States has issued a travel advisory warning for Mexico. The U.S. Embassy has cautioned citizens to delay any travel to parts of Mexico's Michoacán, Durango, Coahuila, and Chihuahua regions. More than 16,000 people have died since Mexico's President Felipe Calderón declared a war on the drug cartels when he stepped into office in 2006. The statement goes on to say that citizens have been harassed or followed while traveling along the border, and that people on the highways between Monterrey and Nuevo Laredo through Matamoros have encountered robbery and violence. This week, reports of violence in Nuevo Laredo has moved the U.S. consulate in Monterrey to warn Americans from traveling there. The most dangerous city in the country is Ciudad Juarez in the state of Chihuahua. The city has 1.3 million residents and has seen more than 16,000 car thefts and 1,900 carjackings in 2009. Ciudad Juarez shares a border with El Paso on the U.S. side, and Mexican authorities report more than 2,600 people were killed in 2009 alone. More news about Ciudad Juarez. U.S. officials plan to embed American intelligence agents in Mexican law enforcement units to take down drug cartels. These actions are the first of its kind, as the U.S. has been unwilling to share sensitive information to its Mexican counterparts under fear that they were corrupt or inept. President Obama has sent the support with the backing of a $1.4 billion aid package. The administration sees the rise of violence in Mexico as a potential threat to U.S. security and will ask for an additional $310 million in aid to be put aside for Mexico in next year's budget. Under this plan, U.S. law enforcement officials would work with the DEA and FBI-trained graduates of the Mexican Federal Police Academy. Mexican President Felipe Calderón faces criticism for Ciudad Juarez. It remains the country's most violent city despite the presence of 10,000 soldiers and police officers. According to a Pew Hispanic Center study, South Carolina has the fastest-growing Latino population in the country. The Latino population has grown 8% from 2007 and 2008, with some counties seeing growth rates of 150%. Some experts are citing that the actual population is greater than the official number of 47 million and that the 2010 census would provide a clearer picture. Univision, the largest Spanish-language television network, has unveiled a new program to boost academic achievement in the U.S. The Miami-based network is partnering with the federal government and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation to help parents understand what it takes to get kids ready for college. Latino college graduation rates are below the national average, and the number of Latinos unemployed is among the highest at 12.6%. Some news out of El Paso. The owners of a troubled charter school are threatening to give the school back to the state. The Riley Faith Family Charter Schools, owned by Karen and Don Belknap, have been in trouble with the state since its accounting practices and use of nepotism made the state take a closer look. If the El Paso school closes, more than 400 pre-kindergarten through fifth grade children will need to move schools, and 45 employees will be out of a job. When it comes to the 2010 census, many Latinos are still unsure. A worry among Latinos is that the census takers will turn in information on immigration status, but by law, these census workers can't share information with any other government agency. A survey released by the Pew Research Center showed 11% of people believe the census would be used to locate undocumented immigrants. It also found that 33% of Latinos did not know about the census, and only half of the 1,504 adults surveyed who knew about it planned to participate. The Census Bureau has spent $133 million on its national advertising campaign, with $40 million of that going towards Spanish advertising. This has been News from Latino USA. I'm Angela Maldonado. For more news alerts, visit us at latinousa.org.
It's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. This week, we continue our series about Sam, an undocumented 18-year-old from Indiana who came to the U.S. from Mexico with his parents when he was only 5 years old. Sam is a young jazz saxophone player who graduated with honors from an Indiana high school. But because he's not eligible for government grants or loans, paying for college has proven almost impossible. He and his family were able to come up with enough money for Sam to start classes at the University of Indiana at South Bend this fall. But as the semester came to a close, they weren't sure how they'd make the final payment or whether Sam would be able to continue classes this winter. Then, through this radio series, an educational group heard about Sam and invited him to a conference in New York City. The College Board wanted Sam to perform the national anthem and take part in some panels on the DREAM Act, that's proposed legislation in Congress that would create a pathway to citizenship for undocumented students. Today on American Dreamer, Sam follows his dream to New York City. Our story is produced by Dan Collison and Elizabeth Meister for Long Haul Productions.
I'm rehearsing the Star Spangled Banner that I'll be playing in New York in a few days. It's a little weird to be asked to play the national anthem of a country that I'm not really of, I guess you could say. In a way, me playing the national anthem and, you know, respecting this country, it is putting in people's face, hey, look, I am American. I grew up with Power Rangers and Barney and all the same stuff you did. When the Star Spangled Banner is playing, I still put my hand over my heart because I take this country as my own. I just want to be recognized as an American because that's what I feel like I am. We're at the Hilton Hotel here in New York City. I'm going to have a mic check here in a few minutes.
Sounds good to me.
After the mic check, we're going to go to the panel where they're going to ask me questions about how I've dealt with the whole immigration status and what it means to be an American, all that stuff.
Today I was talking to one of my colleagues and I said, you know, Sam started off in Indiana on Monday driving here. And my friend said, what, you're too cheap to fly him here? And I had to say, no, he isn't able to fly as a result of not having the ID. That's one of the realities. It's little things. It's also big things like money, access, a sense that there really is a future in education.
It was really scary. one of the first things that popped in my head is, wow, these are like serious people, like professors and really important people. I better not mess this up.
As many of you may know, my name is Sam. You know, growing up, we were warned about a lot of things. You know, don't talk to strangers, don't get in a ice cream van with a weird guy. But also, we had the whole don't tell anyone, you know, what's going on.
Speaking publicly about this, for me, it wasn't the easiest thing to do because I guess I was outing myself. It's always been, keep that to yourself. Don't tell anybody because they could turn us in. They could take everything away from us.
I feel like we are a shadowed society, I guess. Always hiding, always fearful of being deported. And for me, coming here was a big risk to me because it could affect my family.
When you carry something like this on your shoulders, it bugs you every day. This isn't one thing that you bury for a long time. No, this is stuck with you until something changes. It's like a secret that you want to tell, but you're afraid to tell because you're not sure if the people will accept you or deny you.
I love this country very, very much, and I feel like if I were to gain legal status, I could chase my dream of being a musician.
It was the first time in my life I've ever felt safe talking about this in public. I've never done it before, but it felt really nice. You know, everyone seemed really supportive and stuff, and I met some really cool people that are trying and to do stuff for us.
What's something that I could do? Like,
continue to educate people about your story.
That's Alfred Herrera. He's the assistant vice provost at UCLA, and he's worked on the behalf of a lot of undocumented students for the past 30 years, so he's a pretty important guy.
You need to make sure that people understand that this is a human issue. It's about educating the best and the brightest students. And we need to separate it out from immigration because it's not about immigration. It's about educating people like you who came here when they were young and have done everything possible to contribute to our society, and now they're being held back.
So I'd like to thank everyone for supporting the DREAM Act and supporting undocumented students, and just seriously thank you, and all your support really means a lot. And I hope this dream keeps going.
So after that panel, I had to run up and play at the opening ceremony for the conference. I thought it was going to be 5 minutes-ish, but it ended up being more like 15, almost 20 minutes, actually. I didn't have any water or anything, and just the people walking in, the huge room, the lights, the cameras, you know, the flash, everything. I kind of got cotton-mouthed, you know, that dry nastiness in my mouth. And then I thought I was going to have a little rest and a little time to get water or something. But no, I hit the last, like the last C. And I started walking off stage and then...
Please rise for the national anthem performed by Sam, an honor student and recipient of the Woody Herman Outstanding Jazz Award from Elkhart, Indiana.
In my head, I thought, holy crap, I forgot about that. This is so fast. While I was practicing, I remember thinking, I have to be careful with this because for some reason, Bertha, my saxophone, likes to mess with me, and she doesn't like to give me the notes sometimes, so I had to force it. So when I punch it, yeah. And the home of the... Seriously, it sounded like you put a cat in a grinder. It was god-awful. Damn, that sucked. For a second, I thought, I'm in way over my head. Man, they're not going to want me to play again. But thankfully, I played again the following night. And I think I did pretty well on that one. So I'm pretty happy with that performance. We managed to sneak away from the conference and do the tourist thing, you know. I went shopping. We heard jazz at Lincoln Center, jazz at Birdland, and jazz here at St. Peter's Church.
We're now on our way to the Statue of Liberty at Liberty Island.
That was a really, really neat experience because, you know, visually, I didn't expect the Statue of Liberty to be that huge.
Informative, self-paced audio tours are available in multiple languages.
During the audio tour, I realized how many people, like, really sacrificed a lot, you know, to come here.
I'm holding one of the most precious things I'll ever have. It's a piece of thin cardboard, about 4 by 5 inches, with the words inspection card at the top. It says that Nicoletta Pruzzo had been passed by the Immigration Bureau and was permitted to enter the United States of America through the port of New York. She was 6 years old.
I think what we have in common is we just want the same thing, only in a different time period. We all just want the chance to live to our fullest potential. We're all looking for a better life for our families and our future generations.
Nicoletta was my grandmother. And for millions of families like ours, the statue was and is a powerful symbol of freedom and opportunity.
It's pretty humbling, actually. It just represents so much that I want to someday have. Hopefully my kids will be able to have, you know, that freedom. But we'll wait.
Good morning, everyone. We're going to get started now.
The next day, I was back at the College Board Conference for one last panel.
I'm JP, and I'm 23.
JP was the other undocumented student on the panel with me.
I found out I was undocumented when I was 14 years old.
She got her bachelor's and her master's, but she can't use it because she's not documented.
Right now, I'm working as a nanny for a family on the Upper West Side, and as grateful as I am to have a job, period, in this economy, I can't help but wish every day that I could use my degree.
One of the first things I thought when I heard JP's story was, wow, why should I keep going if that's just going to be me?
It's sad. I sit next to Sam, and I'm 6 years older, and he's just starting what, you know, I went through. And I think that's what's so tragic. It's been 6 years and still nothing. I'm still in the same spot.
I got terrified because I thought, man, I'm not going to be able to move forward. Right after my panel, I had to go perform. I was trying to get out, and then this woman came up to me and she said,
Hi, how are you?
Very good.
It's very nice to meet you. I run a scholarship program for first-generation students.
Okay.
I got an email this morning that I have a little balance,
okay.
So I wonder if you're interested in a scholarship.
And she just comes up and says, I would like to help by giving you $2,000. And it was just completely left field, but in my favor. Yeah, we're pretty much out of money, so this is definitely going to be a great help. The $2,000 scholarship basically means that I can finish the semester at least. Oh, it's such a relief.
So, this is my card. Do not lose it.
All right, well, I won't. I'm really, really excited. I'm so happy right now. Woo!
You just need to email me, and I'll send you. You have to send me like your address.
I'm a really, really lucky guy. This is like one of those things where like doors are opening left and right. They're not locked. I just got to walk through them and not be afraid. And here we go, man.
American Dreamer, Sam's story, was produced by Dan Collison and Elizabeth Meister for Long Haul Productions. To hear the entire series, or see photographs, and hear an audio postcard of Sam's road trip to New York City, go to latinousa.org. In a minute, historias from StoryCorps. That's coming up. No se vayan. Stay with us. Hi, it's me again. This podcast of Latino USA is made possible by contributors to public radio stations. They help pay the freight and cover the costs of making the program available to you to hear when it's convenient. If you're already a member of your public radio station, thanks. If you're not, I hope you'll rethink that decision and make a contribution to support this program and others like it. Visit us at latinousa.org to find a public radio station near you and join the ranks of El Pueblo que Escucha Latino USA.
Also, great opportunities exist for companies and organizations to reach the Latino USA audience online, on air, and through these weekly podcasts. If you're interested in having a tremendous impact on the production of this program, consider underwriting Latino USA. For more information, visit us at latinousa.org/support. And thanks for listening. You're listening to Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Time now to check in again with StoryCorps Historias. Today we have two stories, one from Miami and one from New York. First, we hear from Dr. Pedro Joe Greer in Miami. He's been practicing medicine for over 25 years, and he's devoted most of that time to helping Miami's homeless. Here he tells his wife, Janice, how he got started.
I just started my internship. I was in the ICU, and there was a man dying of tuberculosis. He had a little wristband that had his name, and it said, no address. I knew that this man had at the very least parents, maybe siblings, a spouse. And we went out to try and find his family. And what I saw was a little window into this world of poverty that existed in my backyard that I didn't even know was there. And then we went out under the bridges, started seeing patients on Tuesday nights.
Well, I remember when you first came home telling me about the homeless, I was shocked because we live in a suburb, and unless you came downtown, you didn't see it. It wasn't a reality.
A physician's supposed to take care of everybody. That's what medicine is. You got to love people. You have to realize that no matter how many hours you work in the hospital, you get to go home at night. Somebody there doesn't. That's what medicine is. One day I went to the clinic, and it was lunchtime, and it was a mother, and she had three of her kids from the Salvation Army, and her youngest son, about, I guess, 6 years old, had a sweet smile, and I handed him my sandwich, and the kid took the sandwich out of the bag, unwrapped it, broke it in half, took a couple of bites, and they stuck it back in the wrapper. And I couldn't figure out why the kid was doing that. And I asked the kid, why'd you do that? And this little boy just looked up at me and said, it's for my brother. And that was probably one of the most important lessons I ever learned, that a six-year-old homeless child is teaching us what we're all supposed to do. Think about somebody else.
That was Dr. Pedro Greer with his wife, Janice, in Miami. Dr. Greer is the founder of several free healthcare clinics in Miami. An interview from New York about one of the city's greatest poets, Pedro Pietri.
Juan, Miguel, Milagros, Olga, Manuel, all died yesterday, today, and will die again tomorrow.
Those were the opening lines of Pedro Pietri's poem, Puerto Rican Obituary. Pietri was a New Yorican poet who passed away 6 years ago on March 3rd. And here, his friend Jesus Papoleto Melendez tells poet Frank Perez about Pietri's last moments in an air ambulance.
We took off, and as we're ascending, before we had leveled off, our level off point was 45,000 feet. So before we had leveled off, Pedro began leaving us. The beauty about it is that I believe that there's something after life. You could see it in Pedro. Pedro's eyes were open when he was leaving. And when he was leaving, you could see him like no longer paying attention to us, although we were yelling and screaming and telling him to stay in this little plane, you know. His eyes, although open and looking at me, were focused somewhere else deep inside his head. That's who he was paying attention to. That's where he was going. He went somewhere. You could see it. And there was no pain. There's a quiet dignity in that. And, you know, hey, you know, I hated to see my friend go. I love my friend very much. I miss him as all hell. But that was beautiful. That was profound. I had no idea that Pedro and I becoming friends would one day lead to me holding his hand in his final moment and seeing him leave. Like my son said, this is the day you cats had never planned for. And he was right. But it was beautiful. It was a gift that he gave to me in his leaving. And although he was a profound poet, a great person, a great pain in the ass, his leaving like that just shows you that life is indeed a mystery and that this bullshit on earth is not all there is to life. That the spirit matter is what matters more than the human matter.
Juan, Miguel, Milagros, Olga, Manuel will right now be doing their own thing where beautiful people sing and dance and work together, where the wind is a stranger to miserable weather conditions, where you do not need a dictionary to communicate with your people. Aquí se habla español all the time. Aquí you salute your flag first. Aquí there are no Dial soap commercials. Aquí everybody smells good. Aquí TV dinners do not have a future. Aquí the men and women admire, desire, and never get tired of each other. Aquí que pasa power is what's happening. Aquí to be called negrito means to be called love.
That was Jesús Papoleto Meléndez remembering poet Pedro Pietri. To see photos and find out how you can participate in StoryCorps Historias, visit our website at latinousa.org. And if you're near Fresno, California, the project is coming near you, so go ahead and sign up for an interview today. And to find out about more locations for StoryCorps Historias, go to our website at latinousa.org. For this week, this has been Latino USA. Thanks for listening. Visit us online anytime at latinousa.org. Production support for Latino USA comes from KUT Radio, the University of Texas at Austin, and the William and Salome Scanlon Foundation of Austin and San Antonio. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Join us next week for another edition of NPR's Latino USA.
Support for NPR is provided by Civic Ventures, presenting the Purpose Prize to people who solve major social problems in their Encore careers. Nominations at purposeprize.org. By the Doris Duke Charitable Foundation, supporting the performing arts, environmental conservation, medical research, and the prevention of child abuse. And by the Melville Charitable Trust, supporting efforts to find and fight the causes of homelessness. On the web at melvilletrust.org. This is NPR, National Public Radio. To find out how you can reach Latino USA's listeners, visit us online at latinousa.org/support.